scores! Gilmore scores! The ball, three left!
Off the glass, it left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla to the left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by all Aguilla. Rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers.
All right, let's do it. We are underway. It's Wednesday, November 20th, and this hour of Flames Talk's underway from our Groundworks downtown studio with Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. My name is Pat Steinberg on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcast. What's up, Vix?
I'm just happy to be here, bud. There's a lot of good energy in the room today. I like the crew we've assembled. I mean, it's the same crew, but just feels like there's a lot of additional support here today.
I feel that as well. I do feel that. Hope you're doing well if you're listening live or listening on the podcast, whenever you may be. Hopefully your Wednesday and your week is going well. And another night, another win when the Flames find a way to get it done. And they found a way again on Tuesday against the New York Islanders. 2-1 in a shootout over the Isles. And when you take a look at a number of the stats, when you take a look at a number of the things that have gone Calgary's way, this really isn't. Both you and I covered this team a decade ago.
Yes, we did.
I remember vividly when that season ended, who I was sitting beside, and it was you. That season ended in Game 5 against the Anaheim Ducks. We were sitting there at Shanks on McLeod Trail South.
Wow.
Overtime winner, and that was the end of their season. I was sitting there right beside you.
You could have given me like a multiple choice test. I never would have got to. I was sitting beside Pat at Shanks, which is kind of weird because we did that a fair bit, but I just didn't know that that's when that season ended.
Hey,
I was right beside you.
My memory remembers things, some things, and there's a lot of important things that I forget. Anywho.
Whoa, not important.
You are a lot of other important things that I forget.
Just wanted a clarification on that. Thanks.
A lot of, like, this really is starting to feel like that season, the 2014-15 season. It really is starting to feel like that year where the Flames defied the odds. It's different, like, it's different but similar. They're winning games they're quote-unquote not supposed to. They're winning games against all the odds. And that was a big part of that season for the Flames. Now, I don't know if it has been as, like, bonkers dramatic as what it felt like in 2014-15. You know, remember the New Jersey game in November where they were down 2 and scored not once, but twice with the empty net and then won in a shootout. Like, we haven't seen games quite like that, maybe outside of the Vancouver game on night 1 that was so bonkers, but they still have won a lot of games where you're like, huh, I didn't know if they were going to find a way to pull that one out. And then there they are with 2 points at the end of the night. They're now 4 games above 500 on the season. And here they are now, third in the Pacific Division by points percentage and by points. So they are a legit number 3 in the Pacific Division. Playoff odds are now up to 42.4% at Money Puck, which is the highest they've been all season. They're still 9th on their playoff odds, but 9th in the West, but that's the highest percentage it's been all year. So that continues to rise. Lots of people in this market are excited, and I believe rightfully so, because my feeling is, good things don't always happen to this organization, so enjoy them while you can. We've dealt with enough years where good things haven't happened, and we've had to suffer through miserable years and frustrating years and years where they couldn't get a save. Like, you know, you're allowed to have good things. You're allowed to enjoy good things as a Calgary Flames fan. That's kind of my take on it. Enjoy the ride, because here's news for you. Vickers, Wes, Shan, Cam, you listening, me, we can't do anything to control it. There is literally nothing we can do to control what the Flames do on the ice. We can talk about it. We can ask all the questions. We can, whatever you want to do as a fan, you can send vibes. You can cross fingers. You can send nasty tweets or friendly tweets. Nothing we do controls it. So I've always been of the opinion, hey, just enjoy the ride. But I do want to, because, and there are a lot of people who are doing that. There's a lot of people I see after wins like Tuesday night, our text line blows up with people like, holy cow, these guys are crazy. I saw it on Twitter last night, lots of that. And I think that's awesome. I love that there are so many people just enjoying this. But I do want to represent a vocal group of Flames fans as well to start off the hour. And I'm sure this will light up the text line a little bit, which is fine with me because I think it's important to read cross sections on both sides. But Vix, I see it on social. I see it on the text line. I even hear it once in a while on the phone lines, how them doing what they're doing right now, defying many odds, putting themselves very much smack dab in the middle of the playoff hunt, being in a playoff spot, how what they're doing is a bad thing, or how they're hurting the big picture and playing themselves out of a good draft pick, and how they might have to send a better draft pick to Montreal than perhaps you would have liked. I hear that a lot, and I see it more and more on the text line. And there's a couple of guys who have been pretty constant with that. Our boys Dale, our boys Nick, not Nick, Mick. Mick and Dale are two that have been very adamant about that. They're not the only ones.
Rusty Rangers.
Tony on the phone lines. Good reference. Tony on the phone lines. Robert on the phone lines. A few others on the phone lines. Plenty on Twitter have been of this same opinion. And I'm not even saying you're wrong. I will say, still early. First of all, still early. Second of all, I do understand the dilemma. I do understand being torn as a fan right now. And I'm never going to tell you how to be a fan. I really am not. But I'm curious what the text line feels. I'm curious what you feel, Vix, in terms of the whole idea of, well, they're supposed to be bad. They're trying to build for something in the big picture. What they're doing is hurting themselves in the big picture. My feel is that Craig Conroy has been very transparent since the beginning that they're not going to tank, they're not going to try to be bad, they're not going to try to lose games, that they were going to stay competitive, and that they were going to try to make the playoffs. He's been transparent on that from the very, very start and since the beginning of this offseason. So it's not like what's happening is off script. It's not like Craig Conroy's like, no, we're trying to be bad. They were never trying to be bad. He has a 3 to 5 year plan. The plan has just begun. So I'm kind of the opinion, well, let's let it play out. Let the guy cook. We loved his draft in June. We love the fact they're going younger. Like, let the guy have his plan play out before we start ripping it to shreds because they're 4 games above 500 on November 20th. So that's where I'm at. Let it play out. Trust in the guy that a lot of people are very excited about, and trust in the general manager who has put things on a different path for the first time in a long time, and see where it goes. But I know that that's not the opinion held by every Flames fan right now.
As long as Craig Conroy continues, because you laid it out, he's been very transparent about what his plan looks like for the Calgary Flames in the short term and in the long term. So as long as he doesn't deviate from that path based on a 19-game sample that has the Calgary Flames in a Pacific Division playoff spot, never mind a wild card spot in the Western Conference, as long as he's not suddenly switching his focus to trading away young players or young assets or draft picks in order to help bolster their odds at making the Stanley Cup playoffs, then I say, yeah, let the Calgary Flames run wild. And they have through 19 games with a 6.05 save percentage. This season was supposed to be miserable to watch. This season, from the outside looking in,
for some,
but this was going to be a retooling Calgary Flames team that had more questions and answers around them, that were looking to be, from the outside again, this isn't an opinion held by anybody in the organization, or certainly not the players in the dressing room, but a team that was destined for a top 10 pick in the 2025 draft. It has not come anywhere close to that. We've seen a lot of questions be answered through this.
Though,
you still might get there, but the question marks about, okay, you've got a goaltending tandem that is largely unproven. You've got a defense core that is wildly unproven. And the question of, the Calgary Flames have depth up front, how far can that carry them? Well, we're starting to learn some of the answers, at least through 25% of the 2024-25 season. And for the fans that are we willing to call them the vocal minority, the team tank, the this is disaster, or do we know how that split is?
I don't know what the split is. I honestly don't.
Because they're more vocal, I would say, than the fan base that wants to just see this team go out, leave it all on the ice, and let the chips fall.
I think that's fair that they're more vocal, kind of more constantly vocal.
Yeah.
Although I will say that after wins, like, the phone lines right now are lighting up more after wins. The text line is blowing up more after wins on the postgame show, and there is an excitement. So I don't know what the cross section is. I don't know if it's, you know, half and half, or, you know, 30% of people are on team. I don't know, but I do. Here's what I do know. I do know there are a lot of fans who are conflicted and are like, man, I want to see this team build for the future, but I also never want to cheer against my team, and this is fun, but also understanding the draft pick thing. Like, I do think there's a lot of people conflicted right now, and I get that. I do understand. And as much as I say enjoy the ride, I also say, because again, I'm never going to tell you how to be a fan, I also understand, like, if you're a fan, you're like, oh, I understand the big picture too, and, you know, what is better, and feeling kind of being torn in both directions.
I think the Calgary Flames and Craig Conroy and Ryan Huska have done a great job of keeping an eye on both things, wanting to be competitive and integrating a lot of youth. You look back to last season and go even before training camp last year, go September 1. The Flames have added four key pieces to their lineup. That is an everyday player in their lineup since the beginning of last season, with Zary Pospisil, Matt Coronato, and perhaps most importantly, at least through the early part of this season, in Dustin Wolf. So I'd have no reason to think that that methodology will change just because the Calgary Flames have had some early season success this year. I can still see one or two players in that U23, U24 range be incorporated for the balance of the season. You've got a plethora of picks and prospects that are either still in the junior ranks or playing first-year pro that I'm sure we'll see spot duty at some time in terms of those AHLers that are available, and some of the higher end players in the CHL or the NCAA slowly come along. So I understand the angst of Team Tank looking for that top three pick so you can draft that centerman of the future. But at the same time, this isn't a team that's still loading up on veterans hoping to get that chip in a chair into the playoffs.
Well, and again, like, I kind of look at this as year one of the plan. Like, last year was year zero, in that, like, you had, it's like one of those things where, okay, you want to build something. Well, where you want to build is messed up. Like, you got to clear out the land. You got to clean up the land. You got to get rid of what was there before. You got to go demolition, and then you can start to build. Well, I thought that last year was kind of that year zero. This, to me, I don't know if everybody agrees, and obviously you're never going to always agree, but for me, this is year one. This is year one of the process. And if Conroy says it's a 3 to 5 year plan, that's year one of three or year one of five. Or year one of four, I guess. Look, I can do math. But you know what I'm saying? Like, this is the first year that they're trying to implement what they're actually trying to do in this kind of stay competitive, but also build for the future. And I know there are plenty of people who are skeptical about whether you can do that in the modern day in the NHL. And some teams have proven that you can, and other teams have proven that it is extremely, extremely difficult and can be like chasing your own tail and trying to do so. We don't know what the Flames are going to be or how they're going to do it. But I don't know, with how transparent Craig Conroy has been, with how he's laid out how he wants to do, with how he doesn't beat around the bush, and how I think he does a good job using us idiots in the media to talk to the fans. I don't know. I am more than willing to let this thing play out more than just 19 games of the first season of it really starting to come to fruition or starting to get put into place. And I'm willing to say, okay, Conroy has been thinking big picture since he took over. He hasn't deviated his mindset. So why are we already so frustrated about the team? And not everybody, but why are there some so frustrated at how the team is playing to start the year and that they're winning games, so on and so forth? I give Conroy some time. And if you've got faith in him, faith doesn't end up proving itself to you over the course of a month and 19 games. It takes 2 and 3 and 4 seasons sometimes. I don't know. I am more than willing to let this thing play out would be my kind of moral to the story.
Well, what I would add to that is a blanket sort of caution, where Craig Conroy's work isn't done. It's not like he got through that year zero, and I'll agree that this is the first kind of real year Craig Conroy will have the ability to put his stamp on the team, because you're not dealing with 5 or 6 pending unrestricted free agents as soon as you take the job, and you have to sort of visualize how everything's going to unfold. I would probably wager a large sum of money that there is an outline for year 2, an outline for year 3, based on what they have, what they need, the contractual situations of some of the veterans that they have. This isn't Craig Conroy trading 5 pending unrestricted free agents last year, drafting Zane Parekh in with the 9th overall pick in 2024, and then putting his feet up.
We good.
Calling it. All right, guys. We're just gonna sit here exactly. Now and check back with me in 4 years, and we'll see where we're at. Like, that's not the... that's not the motive. That's not the thought process. That's not the scheming. That's not the plan that the Flames front office has, where it's like, okay, well, we just traded 5 unrestricted free agents last year. Okay, we're done. Now let's just wait for all these prospects to ripen. Like, there's a method to, I'm not even going to call it madness, but there's a method to the process that Craig Conroy would have laid out when he was trying to become the general manager of the Calgary Flames, going step 1, step 2, step 3. Here's the vision. Here's the plan that I would implement if I had the chair. We're still in the infancy of that.
Yeah. Text lines, funny enough, lighting up as I thought it might, and there it goes. Before we hit the text line, and we will spend a good chunk on that, because I do want to get a lot of these opinions and kind of throw that out there and let you hear that. But then there's the whole question on top of that for those who are a little angsty about how the team is potentially, quote unquote, playing themselves out of a draft pick, or, you know, playing themselves back into year X of mediocrity, or whatever some of the things you hear are. The question is, like, how sustainable is this going to be? We're still not even a quarter of the way through the season. And while I personally believe they've got a great shot to stay in the playoff hunt right until the very end, and will not surprise me if that's the case. And honestly, at this point, the Pacific Division ain't super strong. Vancouver just lost JT Miller indefinitely. We don't know how long Thatcher Demko is going to stay healthy this time. The Canucks have been very inconsistent. The Oilers, I think, will be just fine. And I think they'll be there. I think we understand what Vegas is. But I don't know. I don't know how the rest of the Pacific Division or even the rest of the Western Conference plays itself out. It's not a super strong conference this year. So could the Flames be in a playoff spot when it's all said and done? Sure, they could. But there are some things. So if I ask the question, how sustainable is what they're doing, Vix? In my mind, I would say it is not sustainable unless some things start to change. If the trends that we're seeing remain static, eventually the results are going to catch up. But I think that the coaching staff understands that. So just a few, like, for instance, 16 games consecutively without scoring more than 3 goals. If that continues to be the norm, yeah, you're going to have more and more issues winning games. Or sitting 32nd overall with less than 200 minutes this season spent in the lead. Last in the NHL, 16.5% of their season has been spent in the lead. Like, that's going to have to change. Or being 10th overall in the amount of times you've trailed, like the 10th most time playing from behind. 5 comeback wins. They're tied for the league lead with 4 comeback wins in the third period. Like, a lot of those things are going to have to improve for sure if they're going to want to end up remaining where they are and being in a playoff spot when it's all said and done. Yes, some trends will have to change. And sometimes, lots of times, trends do change. And if a few of those things do start to turn for the better, and they keep getting goaltending, and maybe it's not top 5 goaltending like it is right now in the NHL the rest of the year, but if they keep getting top half goaltending, which I think through 19 games is a fair expectation with the potential for it to be better, then yeah, this team absolutely can make the playoffs, whether you love that idea or not.
Really feels like this year's edition of the Calgary Flames are just finding a way. And I'll agree with you. I don't think the formula or the recipe that has gotten them to this point is sustainable over an 82-game schedule. You mentioned how much time they've spent trailing and battling back and being one of the best third-period teams in the NHL. But that's, we talk about their style of play a lot and how it's physically taxing. Mm-hmm. Always chasing the game is mentally exhausting as well. So in one pocket, you've got a style of play that is demanding physically, and in the other pocket, you have situational scenarios where it's taxing mentally, and you're not scoring near enough. You're relying on your goaltending too much, in my opinion, and you're not seeing that depth permeate through the lineup that we thought maybe would help keep this team afloat, if you will, for lack of a better term, particularly at the forward position, particularly with the depth on the top 3 lines, knowing that the Flames don't have standout elite offensive talents to the degree that a lot of teams in the Western Conference do. So it was going to be that depth that was going to help them. The fact of the matter remains is they're half a goal a game off their pace from last season. You mentioned it. They haven't scored more than 3 goals in 16 straight. That goes back to October 13th. We're talking about the opening week of the season for the Calgary Flames. And there are just some underlying advanced analytics that paint a picture where this team isn't scoring even at the pace they did last year. And scoring at times last year was a question mark for this group as well. So there are going to need to be some adjustments made if they want to continue being a Pacific Division playoff team and a wild card team in the West.
Now, I will also say there are lots of metrics that, you know, that paint them in a better light. Like their goaltending's top 5 legit in the NHL. Number 1 even strength save percentage in the NHL. Went up last night, Tuesday, with another great night from Dustin Wolf. And they're number 5 overall for team save percentage, just all situations. 912 is their team save percentage. That's 5th overall in the NHL. That's a great thing. And if that trend continues, well, they're going to stay competitive.
You're buying yourself time to get the scoring solution figured out.
And they're also one of the best high danger scoring chances teams in the NHL in terms of what they limit. And they've gotten better at that as the year goes along. In terms of high danger chances against, they're in a pretty good spot. They're in the top half of the NHL, and they're not allowing a ton of high danger chances against, and they're doing a nice job kind of protecting that house area, which is a good thing to continue to have as part of your kind of DNA. Like, to be tough to play against and to be a team that is tough to get to the front of the net on, and you can be, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, can be 10th overall in high danger chances against per natural stat trick. And I know the Flames have their own metrics, and there's some different sites that come up right with their own high dangers, but natural stat trick's one that I use. 10th overall in terms of limiting high dangers. That's a good thing, too. So there are metrics that don't paint them in a very good light, and those are ones that, they're probably going to need to improve a few of them. And there are also some that if they continue, that's going to keep them in good stead as well.
Well, that's probably the main reason for optimism if you're the Calgary Flames, and you can look at a lot of these statistics that will roll out, and they're in a playoff spot, but I think that they would agree, whether you're talking to a player, a coach, or management, that we haven't seen the best of the Calgary Flames yet. Because you mentioned defensively, they've been able to lock it down quite a bit. Their goaltending certainly has. But we haven't seen, again, that offensive game sort of translate. You mentioned the high danger chances against. Well, they're 22nd in high danger chances for, which is down almost a chance per game from last season. Their shooting percentage is down a full percent over last season. And just to sort of average it out over an 82-game schedule, the Flames this year are shooting at 7.24%. Last year, 8.37. Over an 82-game schedule, you're looking at, based on, you know, roughly 30 shots a game, that's 27 fewer goals over an 82-game schedule. How many extra wins does 27 goals get you if you're the Calgary Flames? But that's also a reason for optimism. If you're already here, you're already third in the Pacific Division, and you can correct some of these other areas and not have the areas where you've been successful so far suffer as a result, there's still vast room for improvement from an individual standpoint from players, collective standpoint from the team, special teams, you name it. There's a lot of reason to be optimistic with this group from where they are to where they could go, as opposed to the opposite.
Okay, want to get to as many texts as I can now at 960-960. Kevin in North Haven. Connie, for the love of Harvey, cut deep at the deadline. Losing that first round pick would be an awful outcome for this season, regardless of playoff position. We all know this team has no chance of going the distance and raising any type of banner. That's one where it's like, okay, don't go. And I don't think they're going to go all in for a playoff spot or anything like that. But I do think pragmatism is important too. I still think you need to make sure that if there are trades on the table, you're not going to say no to them just because of where your playoff spot is. And honestly, I don't think they will. I think that the big picture will continue to be the priority. This reads, people got to understand it's a business. You're in the business to be successful. They're going to play hard. If they don't win, nothing they can do. If they have success, good on them. Draft picks, you never know what's going to happen or how long they're going to take. They're doing the right thing. If they lose that pick to Montreal, so be it. I wouldn't mind being a playoff team. This says, a winning culture is worth more than any draft pick. Just ask early 2000s Detroit and Edmonton. T Tim says, and Moose Jaw, I'm seriously so conflicted. I want them to win now and make the playoffs, but at the same time, I want to see a cup contender for the 27-28 season. Please help. And that is where I think a lot of Flames fans are right now. This from Dylan in Revy. Being on a team rebuild should include being happy that you win games off the backs of young players like Wolf and Coronado lately and Zeri earlier. Man, developing young players properly sucks. We should really stop that. He says that sarcastically. Getting that pick would be great for sure, but who says you can't draft a foundational player later on? Where was Kucherov drafted again? Kucherov, a second-round pick, by the way. This says, some people seem to forget tanking doesn't guarantee success. Also, you can find good picks throughout a draft. There are a lot of techs here, by the way. This says, last season they were in the mix until March or April and still picked top 10. It's too early to be upset, but a 17th finish is no good. I do think that's really important, too. It is still really early. We're not even a quarter of the way through to be worrying about them finishing X play. There's still lots that can play itself out. There's still trades. There's lots that can happen, right, between now and when this fully becomes a reality, right?
Well, yeah, we're still looking at, what, 5 or 6 months remaining in the regular season. You got to get past the trade deadline. We don't know what it looks like leading up to that. We don't know what the Flames look like coming out of that. And I do understand the trepidation of, I feel like it's either finish with a top 10 pick or make the playoffs. And there's that little gray area gap, that mushy middle that I think causes the biggest concern amongst the fan base, whether you're team tank or whether you're make the playoffs.
Ken and Red Deer, how can you question the ability of Ball, Miramanov, and Zeri and what they're showing for the future? Wolf's playing as advertised, a mix of vets like Coleman, Backlund, and Kadri. Ride it out and enjoy. Sean in Calgary says, if you plan for failure, you will succeed. Have you ever had a teammate you worked with or a company where you worked for where they said, hey, let's purposely suck for a while and then let's hope for the best? Would you feel motivated or inspired by that? A winning mentality matters, not necessarily winning, but a winning mentality. This from James. To Team Tank, you're showing your true colors. In what world would an individual want to not do their best in what they do? This reads, how do they land that superstar center without drafting? I don't think they do. I do still think they have to draft it. But what remains to be seen is, do they have to draft it number one overall, or can they draft it number 13 or number 19 or whatever the case may be? Number eight, so on and so forth.
Yeah, that's a... Sorry, my headphones are going all wonky here. There we go. That's a scenario where
Your face, like, you looked so terrified.
Well, and to be perfectly honest, I couldn't hear you, so I didn't think you were making it to air. So I'm like, what's going on here? Anyways, I digress. Like, yeah, but drafting top five doesn't guarantee you a number one center either. There, you can look back to Sam Bennett at number four, the highest draft pick in history, and he didn't exactly flourish in that role as a member of the Calgary Flames either.
I have never been on Team Tank ever. Now, though, with all that happened over the last 2 years and the position they're in and who's available in next year's draft, they have to take advantage of this opportunity. Mike says, a group of us Flames fans in the office and on the job site, and every one of us are hoping for the playoffs. Let Wolf take them to the finals like Wah did for the Habs back in the day. To heck with the rebuild. Jay in Mayland says, my thoughts are they were supposed to be bad, which put a chip on their shoulders. It's a long season. Who knows where they'll be in April? What I do prefer is a no-quit attitude and a winning culture than a high draft pick. Just look up the QE2, two of the best players on earth, and currently they're behind us in the standings. In Conroy, I trust and let him work. Cheers from Jay. This says... from Big Al, the problem with the Rescue Ranger chipmunks in our fan base is they're never happy. And I get it. We've had a long run of mediocrity, but the whole point of this season is to start figuring out who the next core pieces are, who will ideally continue to grow and learn together. If the drivers of continued success remain the Wolf, Zeri, Pospisil, Coronado, Ball, Sharky types who could be part of this club for a long time, long enough to meaningfully turn the corner, then no matter what happens this year, you're happy, you take it, and you keep building. This reads from Will in South Calgary. Love the on-ice product, Wolf, Zeri, etc. Just as a Flames fan who has been around for 35 years, you get top talent by picking high in the draft, and the Flames have been in the mushy middle more often than not. This from Andrew. The way you laid that out, Pat, just sounds like the same old. The only thing the Flames haven't tried is tearing it down. This from Jeff in Northeast Calgary. What's the goal? To win the Stanley Cup. Whether it's realistic or not, the ultimate goal is to win. I get it. Ups and downs, ebbs and flows. Developing a losing culture is not negotiable. Stay the course. Here's Mick, who I referenced earlier. You can't play it both ways, one toe in and one out. It's time to move Kadri before it's too late. Nashville needs him, and they have 3 first-round picks. Retain first picks and retain Coleman for Krebs, Vladar for a second. Conroy isn't thinking big picture. He's trying to have it both ways. All Conroy's done is move guys who didn't want to re-sign. Trevor and Lethbridge. Two things. One, I'd rather have a culture of hard work, winning, than tanking. It helps the youngsters. Two, only 10 points behind Calgary and Chicago. If the Flames get the injury bug, anything could happen. I love the foundation being set. This reads, okay, so what if they're actually good? Like, seriously, I'm a proud Calgarian and was here during 04 and 14. I'd rather watch my team try and win. Who the heck gives a rat's behind about a draft pick? Look at the Oilers. They've been farming for picks as long as I remember. They drafted McJesus, but that's like once in a decade after how many failed first-round picks. I'm not going to get to all the texts, by the way. I'm just going to tell you right now. This reads at 960-960. What do these people expect? Conroy sold every UFA he could, got younger. He's trying to also keep the current vets placated with a couple UFAs in Mantha and Kuzmenko. The young players have really carried them to date, which is more than what you could ask for going into the year. It's appeared to be a meritocracy, which is what you want, and it's proving itself with how hard these guys play every night. I'm with you, Pat. Enjoy the ride and let Craig put his team in place. You just hope that if they lose the pick, that they at least make the playoffs, even if it's a first-round exit. They won't finish bottom three no matter what this year. Boy, like, I still have like 50 texts that I haven't read yet. I apologize. We're not going to get to all of them. Imagine what you guys would have to talk about if the Flames were sitting winless right now and that was the expectation. What would you even talk about?
They were 0-19. I feel like there'd be a lot of things to talk about, but I understand the point.
Big G says the skill cupboard's pretty thin. The Flames need a couple years of top 8 draft picks. This reads, instilling a culture of losing is never a good option. The Oilers got number one picks after number one pick for how many years, and they sucked for the last 20 years. Buffalo is another example of a team that tanked, and they still suck. What the Flames are doing now is the perfect way to do it. And anyway, anyone that's on Team Tank is obviously not paying attention to how the league works. And plus, I don't think Murray Edwards would ever allow such an attitude. A culture of losing is never a good thing to instill. I'm trying to get to a number of unread texts and then I'll move on. This says, what's the value of 2 Stanley Cup playoff games to Flames ownership? I'm wondering if there's ever a chance ownership pressures Conroy to do something else just before the deadline if they're in playoff contention. I honestly don't believe that would be the case. I think Conroy has the keys and is able to steer the ship based on the plan that he has presented. And finally, I know everyone keeps up bringing the 2014 Flames, but I see more of the expansion Golden Knights as the model that Conroy is following. 3 balanced lines and good goaltending, building a competitive culture and a foundation for the future. I apologize for the text I didn't read. I literally have 20, 30 texts still that I haven't read. I didn't think it would light it up this much, but there we have it. People like to get
polarizing topic.
Right, it really is. It really is. I appreciate the text 960-960. I'll make sure I read as many as I can when we're not on the air. But we got to make way for the Daily Flames Roundtable. He's Vickers. I'm Steinberg, and we're coming at you this hour on Flames Talk from our Groundworks Downtown Studio. Your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
Flames Talk is live on Calgary's Hockey Station, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
First half of the hour, big picture conversations. Now let's get into the nitty-gritty of what's happening on the ice for the Flames as they get set for the New York Rangers on Thursday night. Daily Flames Roundtable time, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport. Pat Steinberg, Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. Now the voice of the Calgary Flames, Derek Wills, joins us to complete our Wednesday roundtable. Boys, third period of that 2-1 shootout win over the Islanders Tuesday night. Lines got juggled up a little bit. Essentially, Ryan Huska flipped Blake Coleman and Yegor Sharangovich. Sharangovich moved to a line with Backlund and Coronado, and then Coleman moved to the line with Zeri and Huberdeau. And we saw that at practice for the entire practice on Wednesday morning at the Scotiabank Saddledome. And the main takeaway of that for me would be, for the first time all year, Blake Coleman, Michael Backlund not together on a line, which is almost certainly how they're going to start Thursday against the Rangers. Gents, how do we feel about Coleman and Backlund being broken up on a line?
Well, it's really the only thing they haven't tried with their forward lines this season. They've tried just about everything else, every other possible combination. And, you know, since the start of the season, when the Flames were scoring goals in bunches, they had six on a couple of occasions, they've struggled to score goals on most nights. I mean, they've scored three or fewer goals in 16 straight games, which is crazy when you think about it. They're actually above 500 in the win-loss column during that stretch, which I think speaks volumes about how good the goaltending's been and how good they've been defensively for the most part in front of Dan Vladar and Dustin Wolf. But they have to start scoring some more goals. So I completely understand why Ryan Huska would finally, maybe as a last resort, to break up a combo that's been fantastic for a number of years in Michael Backlund and Blake Coleman. Hey, you can always put them back together. So if you feel like it's not working with them apart, you can put them back together and you know they're going to pick up where they left off. But, you know, I thought the Flames started to generate more offensively after they did do some line juggling last night. So that might have something to do with it. But again, you've got to get some guys going. Coleman has proven that he can do that. He is, as I think Ryan Huska tried to describe him today, a little bit of sandpaper on the wing. So hopefully he brings that element to that new look line. And then, you know, Michael Backlund is just such a fantastic 200-foot centerman. And he's been getting a ton of opportunities offensively. So he's actually been playing at a really high level, and a lot like Connor Zary, for me at least, he's been snake-bitten as far as goals and points go. So, hey, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. But right now, Flames offensively are kind of broken, so they're trying to fix that, and I think trying some new combinations could pay dividends. And again, if it doesn't work, you go back to Backlund and Coleman, and you know that that combination will.
Yeah, for me, you don't like to see them split up just be based on the fact that they're together so much, but you look through this lineup and you see all sorts of players in all sorts of situations that are struggling offensively for the Calgary Flames, and Backlund and Coleman have typically been the fixer for whoever the third is on that line. So if you're able to split them up and have them each individually hopefully impact positively a different line so you can get more players going, it's going to benefit the Calgary Flames. And if you just look at the minutes played for lines amongst the Calgary Flames, the top two lines in terms of minutes played, Coleman, Backlund, Coronado, Coleman, Backlund, Zary, each right around the 100-minute mark. Then the third closest is Huberto Pospisil-Mantha at 62. So there's no doubt that Backlund and Coleman have had a lengthy run so far this season, primarily with Coronado and Zary. But when you've got three, four forward lines that aren't producing on a regular basis, nothing should be off the table for the Calgary Flames in order to try and jumpstart some offense.
Well, I mean, more than anything else, guys, here's what I'm quite confident in. They will be back together at some point this season. I can guarantee you.
I'm not taking that bet.
Derek Wills, Aaron Vickers, I can guarantee you that Backlund and Coleman will be back together on a line at some point this year. You want to hear the most staggering number?
Yes.
So I just went and looked this up. Since Blake Coleman signed with the Flames in the summer of 2021, and so this would be, what, is this his fourth season here or third season here? Whatever it is. This is fourth season. So now in his fourth season, Michael Backlund at 5-on-5 has played with these players the most. The number one player he has played with the most is Blake Coleman. More than 2,400 minutes they've played together 5-on-5. That's even more than Michael Backlund was on the ice with Jacob Markstrom for. Jacob Markstrom as a goaltender is out there every time back. Like, that blows my mind, because usually you go to Natural Stat Trick and you do your teammate breakdown, right? And it says, oh, okay, like, he's played with this guy. And usually if you do it by numbers, especially over the course of a season, a goaltender will always be number one, because here's your Sherlock Holmes moment of the day. The goalies are on the ice for the whole game. So I find that fascinating. And then it drops from Coleman at 2,400 minutes to Andrew Mangiapane at just under 1,700 minutes. So, like, there is a massive gap between who Backlund has played with since Blake Coleman has been here from Coleman to everybody else, which is why I'm quite confident that they'll be back together at some point. In fact, fully confident. However, Willsey, I'm with you. I think, like, at this point, the stat that we talked about on Tuesday's roundtable that Megan Mickelson rolled out for us about going into Tuesday, 15 straight games without scoring three or more goals. Well, they scored one goal on Tuesday, so that's 16 straight games. This team is not scoring goals, and eventually you're not going to be able to rely on goaltending all the time. Eventually, you're not going to be able to rely on comebacks in your great third periods. Like, if you don't start scoring more goals, you're going to start losing more games. And I think that Ryan Huska and the coaching staff is very aware of that. This team protects well. This team defends well. They limit quality chances well. And they've gotten top five NHL goaltending. Those are all good things that you want to continue. Now you have to couple it with they got to start getting more offense and start producing more offense, both on the power play. But guys, it's not like they've been this great generating five-on-five team either. They haven't been. So I can understand trying something a little bit different, especially to your point, Wilsey. It did kind of work in the third period of Tuesday night's game.
Yeah, and as you guys have talked about so often, Michael Backlund and Blake Coleman as a combination have been fixers for players who are struggling or players who the Flames are trying to bring along and develop. And you know, Connor Zeri looked really good playing on the left side with those two guys. And more recently, Matt Coronato looked really good playing on the right side with those two guys. I think what allows Ryan Huska to break up that Backlund-Coleman combination right now is that it's almost like Zeri has graduated and is now playing well without them. And I would say the same about Coronato. I think Matt Coronato has really taken a massive step forward, not just with the puck, but without the puck. And the way he's playing, I don't think you have to, it's going to sound bad, I don't think you have to babysit him with Michael Backlund and Blake Coleman anymore. I think Coronato can, you know, just play with anybody, and with the way he's playing, he can continue to help the Flames win hockey games. So I'm anxious to see what the new lines look like, assuming we see them in tomorrow's game against the Rangers. But, hey, the Flames have to start scoring more goals. There's no doubt about it. They've done a great job getting to four games above 500 in the win-loss column, despite the fact they haven't scored more than three goals in a game in their last 16. But I'm not sure that that formula is going to work a lot longer. So hopefully these new combinations spark the offense and, you know, they become an even tougher team to beat.
And looking how they've split them up with moving Coleman to the wing with Connor Zeri, who they've had some chemistry earlier this season, as you mentioned, Wilsey, with Michael Backlund as the center there. But bringing Sharon Govich on the Backlund line with Matt Coronato is a trio that I'm interested to see as well. And to be perfectly honest, if I were looking at breaking up Backlund Coleman, I think it'd be Sharon Govich who I'd want on that left wing with Backlund and Coronato. He's a little bit more offensively inclined. We know we haven't seen that this year, just 2 points, both goals in the time that he's played this season. But if you're looking to jumpstart a Sharon Govich, putting him with Michael Backlund, as you refer to him as the fixer, him and Blake Coleman being fixers, that's a good spot for Sharon Govich. But you're also giving Matt Coronato, another offensive-minded player who's still got sort of that 200-foot game as well to lean on, but you're giving a little bit more offensive creativity to that line too.
Daily Flames Roundtable, Derek Wells, Aaron Vickers, Pat Steinberg on this Wednesday. And one of the players that the kind of shuffle on Tuesday night and then that carried over into Wednesday morning's practice, one of the guys that affected would be Connor Zeri, who now has two games under his belt this season playing down the middle. It's early, and you know how when you cover a team daily and you're right in the thick of talking about them and in the teeth of living and dying with every game, like a show like Flames Talk might be, yeah, you're going to take very small sample sizes and make opinions and judgments on them. It's only been six periods, but two games for Zeri down the middle. How are we feeling about it in the very early going?
Well, seven periods if you include overtime, so that makes it a little bit bigger sample size, an extra 5 minutes worth of sample size, but I would say he's been fine. I mean, Connor Zeri continues to generate offensively, whether it be on the wing or at center. I don't really think that has changed since he swapped positions. Time on ice is a real indicator for me. If you're getting less time on ice, it probably means the coach doesn't like what he sees. If you're getting more time on ice, it probably means that he does. So just looking at the small two-game sample size that we have to work with since they shifted him to center, if I'm not mistaken, you guys can correct me because I'm not in front of a computer, but I think he played just over 13 minutes against the Predators last Friday, and he was over 17 minutes in last night's game. Is that sound about right?
Yeah, 13-12 against Nashville, 17-23 against the Islanders.
Yeah, so that tells me that Ryan Huska probably thought that he was a little bit better against the Islanders than he was against the Predators. And it's going to be a transition. I talked to Connor Zeri about it prior to yesterday's game, and he said, yeah, he's got some different defensive responsibilities, but, you know, he doesn't have a preference. And I expected him to say this. I almost set him up to say this. But, you know, he basically said that, hey, I'll play wherever they want me or they need me, which is, you know, kind of the stock answer you would expect to get from a player. But I actually believe him when he says that. I think he enjoys the challenge of some of the additional defensive responsibilities that come with playing at center ice. And you know what? It's not like he was tearing it up offensively on the wing. So the shift to center, I don't think, really has negatively impacted him in that regard. So a small sample size. We'll have to see where it goes from here. I still think in a perfect world, you know, the Flames could add a player who is in his early to mid-20s and who is already a legitimate top nine centerman in this league. But I'd like to get a Ferrari under the Christmas tree, and that probably won't happen. And I'm not sure that making that trade happen right now is all that realistic for Craig Conroy and the management group. So you're trying to see what you've got within right now. And two games in, I think it's worth continuing that experiment with Connor Zeri playing up the middle.
Wilsey, you better hope you get me as Secret Santa, because now I know exactly what you want. And if I draw your name, you're going to get it, buddy. No questions asked. We're talking about Connor Zeri playing 30 minutes total down the middle. Not a significant sample size for me. I would like to see 2, 3, 4 more games. And this is an experiment that I would hope would extend and not be sporadic, where he's center one night, wing the next night. I do think he's still trying to find his way defensively a little bit, and that's understandable. Moving from the wing to center, there's much more responsibility. There's sort of coverage details that you need to be aware of and on top of at all times. And there have been a few times where I've seen him too high in the zone or in the wrong spot or covering an area that maybe he was more inclined to cover as a winger. But it's going to be a work in progress. I'm not going to judge it after 30 minutes. The thing that I would like to see a little bit more of is taking command in the defensive zone, but then skating the puck out himself. His skating has improved leaps and bounds from 2 years ago. His stick handling is dynamic. He's got that ability to put defenders on their heels. So just sort of that transitional game I'd like to see more of. But we're talking about a small sample size. We're talking about two games. We're talking about 40 shifts. This is something I want to sort of examine on a larger scale and give him a full run. I just hope that he gets that full run, whether it's firing on all cylinders or whether it's a work in progress, just so he has a consistent body of work where he's not flip-flopping around.
I thought he was invisible at best and struggled at worst against Nashville. Now, I wasn't in the building. I watched that game back after the fact, but I thought he struggled for the most part on Friday. And I thought it was night and day against the Islanders one game later. I thought he was, especially on the offensive side of things, he was dynamic. I love the way that he was carrying the puck in with confidence and delaying and, you know, creating time and space to get things set up for his line mates. So I thought it was night and day from Friday to Tuesday. He was number two on the team against the Islanders with three high danger scoring chances. Only Michael Backlund had more. He was all around the net on Tuesday as well with four. So I thought Zeri was dangerous. I thought he was around it. He was putting pucks towards the net. And I thought offensively he was doing the things that I thought would translate, or the things that I wanted to see translate when I was kind of pounding the table for a few weeks there about giving him a run at center. And I saw those things a whole lot more on Tuesday. Didn't see them much at all on Friday, guys. Now, I still think that there are going to be some moments, frustrating moments defensively,
growing pains
defensively. I still think that's going to be the case. I think we saw a few of them on Tuesday. In fact, you know, the first goal, or the only goal the Islanders scored, was kind of the result of some, a turnover by Zeri as he was trying to be last one out of the offensive zone. And that kind of led to the Islanders getting possession. And then Zeri couldn't get a clear either. So, you know, he was involved in a bad way on the only goal against the Islanders. But, like, I think you have to be okay with those things if you're going to give a second-year guy in the NHL a real opportunity to grow into this role. And I think you need to be okay with a couple of things taking some time to get to the level you want it to be at. But if we continue to see the offensive side of things like we saw last night, his confidence and ability to gain the zone, carry the puck in with some speed, and then use his skill and possession and skill level to create time and space and really get a cycle going and start creating, I think that there's a real chance that this can turn into something positive. And again, you know, is it 5 games? Is it 10 games? I don't know what the leash should be. Should be more than 2 games. And I think it is more than worth continuing to try here, guys.
Yeah, I mean, if you continue to see some progression in Connor Zary's game at center, then I think you continue the experiment. If he starts to regress, then maybe you look at another option, whether it be circling back to Martin Pospisil, which I don't love, maybe Igor Sharangovich, or maybe there's somebody else that I'm not thinking about right now, or maybe you start to look a little bit harder for outside help. But, you know, the fact that he went from just over 13 minutes to just over 17 minutes in his first 2 games, I think is certainly a positive sign. And I can't remember who said it. I think it was Ryan Huska. If it wasn't the head coach, it was one of the assistant coach. I've quite often described puck-playing goaltenders like Mike Smith and to a lesser extent Jacob Markstrom. And I really think Dustin Wolf's really improved playing the puck as well, starting to see more confidence in that part of his game. But I've quite often described those guys as third defensemen. And I think it was, again, I think it was Huska who said last week that a centerman is like a third defenseman because of the additional defensive responsibilities that he has. I don't think I've ever heard a coach refer to a forward or a centerman in that way before. But I do think it really emphasizes how much more responsibility they have and, you know, different spots they have to be at the ice at different times. And wingers are maybe a little bit more freed up to get out of the offensive zone and start that transition game. So, you know, Connor Zary can be as dangerous or even close to as dangerous at center as he was on wing. And I know he wasn't getting rewarded with goals and points, but, man, he was still creating a lot of chances for himself and for the team. And I think that would be a huge development for him and for the Flames. So Hopefully we'll see continued progression. And that would be that'd be great because, again, it still feels like they're short one top nine centerman right now.
For sure. And then if this doesn't work out, then you're probably looking to try Kirkland there for a little bit of a run. And I think.
Yeah, but is he a top nine guy?
I don't know. And that's why I think it's really important to give Zary a good little run in doing this. And then I do think, Wilsey, to that point, I think, you know, against the Islanders, I think we did see him look a whole lot more dynamic and more like that guy that we saw on the wing. Again, I thought he was all around it, had some really quality opportunities. That redirect almost went in, and he had a couple of other good opportunities that he created on his own. So I thought we saw that step against the Islanders too, which is a positive. If that can continue or even progress even more, that's only going to be good for the team.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't want to put a glass ceiling on Justin Kirkland. Clearly, he's a late bloomer. But, I mean, I think it's important to slot players properly and not to ask them to do too much, at least on a long-term basis. So, you know, he's been very productive playing at center on the wing in that fourth line. So, in a perfect world, I'd like to leave him there. But, hey, if this doesn't work, maybe that is something to give a shot.
Good stuff, Wilsey. We'll do it again on Thursday at the Dome. Thanks, as always, my friend.
Okay, guys, stay safe on the roads out there.
He is Derek Wills. He's Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg. That's your Daily Flames Roundtable. Thanks to Shan and Cam, our producers this hour, and great stuff on the text line as well. Thanks to all of your input on the text line, especially in the first half of the hour, because text line blew up with that conversation when we got into the dilemma that is this start to the season, at least for some, by the Calgary Flames. As we start to wrap up this hour, a reminder, the Daily Flames Roundtable brought to you, as always, by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills, just minutes from the airport.